very smartly done, Tony. Welcome, truth seekers, to the Mike Malloy program. It is I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, here with you again, broadcasting live from Los Angeles at the studios of lovely K-Talk AM 1150 in the middle of beautiful downtown Burbank. Thank you, Tony. Smartly done. We're glad to have you all with us today. We're here all week long as the Malloys are off on a well-deserved vacation down in the Sunshine State. But never fear, truth seekers, we'll make it up to you. We got a hell of a show ahead and a hell of a week ahead. Coming up on today's show, Andy Worthington, journalist, historian, and author of, he's the guy who wrote the book on Guantanamo, the Guantanamo Files. He's going to be joining us very shortly, so if you have any questions about Guantanamo and what the hell is going on down there, what the hell's not supposed to be going on down there, anything else, feel free to give us a call. We'll try to get you on this hour with Andy Worthington. Our number is 877-520-1150. That's different than Mike's normal number, so don't call the Malloys. Call us this week only, 877-520-1150. We'd love to hear from you. Also coming up today, Mr. Grant. Desi, can you do a Mary impression? Can you do a Mr. Grant sort of thing?
Mr. Grant.
That was pathetic. That was the worst, yeah.
You need to do, oh, Rob.
There you go.
That's better, but that's a different show.
How's that? Ed Asner is going to be joining us a little bit later in this show. And you're going to want to stick with us. He is the star, aside from being Mr. Grant, the star of the smash Pixar film Up, which if you have not seen Up, please do. It is just beautiful, and I hardly need to convince anybody to go see that movie because everybody's going to see it, but it's really a beautiful film, particularly beautiful in 3D, I might add. So Ed Asner is going to be with us. Desi, you just heard Desi Doyen, my producer. She's going to be back a little bit later with the Green News Report. She's my co-host on the Green News Report. If you're not familiar with that, you can check that out at greennews.bradblog.com. If you're not familiar with it, shame on you and shame on your radio station for not carrying it, because we would love to be on your affiliate station. 6 minutes of the most smashing, scintillating green news radio in the green news radio business. We're going to have that a little bit later. Plus, your calls for Desi. You actually get to talk back this time to Desi. And tomorrow I want to add Sibel Edmonds is going to be with us, the FBI whistleblower. Wake the neighbors, spread the kids. Wait, what? I don't know. Sibel Edmonds is going to be joining us tomorrow, taking your calls. If you don't know who she is, go Google her. It's an extraordinary story that she has to tell. But we're going to be talking about not just her FBI whistleblowing and what she's not allowed to tell. She is, after all, the most gagged woman in America, according to the ACLU. So who knows what she'll disclose illegally and if she'll get thrown in jail before the hour is out. We're going to talk not only about that stuff with her, but also her new project, Project Expose MSM. Yeah. All right. Well, before we get to Andy Worthington here and your calls for Andy, a couple of items. We talked yesterday about this insane story. Governor Sanford of South Carolina disappeared 6 days ago. Didn't tell his wife where the hell he was going. He missed Father's Day, by the way. He's got 4 sons, I believe. He was gone. He hadn't talked to his wife. She had no idea where he is. It's an amazing story. Well, we've got an update that we're supposed to believe, and this comes this morning from ABC's Jake Tapper. He says that, Tapper twittered this morning that Governor Sanford has now made contact with his office. Here's the Twitter. Gov Sanford called office and was, quote, taken aback when learning of interest his trip has garnered, his spokes says. Will return to office tomorrow. Of course, what's notable here is that while the spokespersons for Governor Sanford had been working overtime to make it seem like everything was just fine, there's nothing to worry about here, these aren't the droids you're looking for, well, as it turns out, it doesn't actually seem like anybody has talked to the governor. So whether they're putting out an effective cover story to make everybody feel like everything is just fine is hard to say. Apparently there was enough concern that they bothered to track his cell phone to figure out where they were able to last pick it up. They last picked it up in Atlanta last week. As I believe AP reported, a mobile telephone tower there picked up a signal from his phone, according to a source familiar with the situation. Well, if there's no problem, why are they going to the phone company and figuring out where his cell phone last pinged? The paper goes on to say, this is South Carolina's The State newspaper, says that since then, the governor's state and personal phones had been turned off, and Sanford had not responded to phone or text messages, a source said. Most mobile phones cannot be tracked if they are turned off. Most mobile phones cannot be. I didn't notice that when I read the story the first time. Hello, NSA. I've got my phone turned off, but they know where I am. I've got nothing to hide. Speaking of something to hide, Adam Fogel, writing for Palmetto Scoop, seems to have found something that perhaps Sanford did want to hide. Well, I'll let him tell it here. He asks, quote, why would a sitting governor just up and disappear to the mountains without telling a single soul, including his family? Well, the Palmetto Scoop may have discovered the answer to all the secrecy. The governor may have gone for a naked hike, Fogel writes. Yeah. No, really, he says. Fogel then points to an AP article which reported that every year on the first day of summer, a few outdoor enthusiasts nationwide expose virtually all of themselves to insects, scrapes, and thorns for the pleasure of bonding with nature au naturel. They call it Naked Hiking Day. This year, the summer solstice falls on a weekday, on a weekend, this Sunday, Father's Day. Fogel asks, could it be that Sanford just wanted to go au naturel in the middle of the woods and was too embarrassed to tell anyone? Or perhaps he was one of the nudist hikers arrested by police and they had to work out a deal to quietly get him released just to help spread that scandalous rumor. Of course, I'm not the only one spreading that scandalous rumor. MSNBC was, too. So if they can do it, I can do it. Yeah, that's so they're reporting that his office is reporting that everything's fine. He's on the Appalachian Trail hiking. Naked. All right, they didn't say that part, but I said that part. Now, just before we went in the air here, Des, who I'm going to call you back into service here again, you said there is additional news now.
Yeah, I just saw this, and I'm waiting for the I'm looking to get more information. But the first indications are NBC Atlanta has a scoop that a state vehicle was reported as missing, and that was one of the reasons that they were saying he had checked out a state vehicle. This state vehicle was found not at the Appalachian Trail, but at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport in Atlanta. So the sources that this reporter at NBC Atlanta talked with said that a federal agent had spotted Governor Sanford at the airport getting on a plane, but that he was not accompanied by a security detail.
Where? Yeah, right. He took no security detail. They said this is not unusual for him to go off the grid without security detail, except not overnight. And the first time he's done this overnight, and this is for six nights. And of course, I'm laughing, and you know, something horrible could have happened to him. So
right.
So we are glad
to hear that he has checked in and that he's fine.
I don't know if he has checked in.
I thought you said.
Well, that's what Jake Tapper reported that Sanford's office has said. So if you believe his spokespersons who are trying to put a lid on this story, in fact, the lieutenant governor is none too happy about it. Apparently, he was rebuffed by the governor's staff when he tried to find out where Sanford was and had not been put in charge in his absence. This is Lieutenant Governor Andrew Bauer. He said, I cannot take lightly that his staff has not had communication with him for more than 4 days. This was 2 days ago when he said this, and that no one, including his own family, knows his whereabouts. This is the lieutenant governor, okay? And just in case, Mark Sanford, by the way, is a
Republican, hopeful.
That's right, for 2012 for the presidential race, or at least he was before this nonsense. Who wants your president sort of disappearing for 6 days? But just in case you think this is a Democratic thing, they're out to get him. This is what Senator Jake Knotts, a Lexington Republican, had to say about Sanford. Now, Knotts has been a critic of Sanford, but he says that the state needs to know where the governor is. The way things are in the world today and Homeland Security, we need the governor to be fingertips away. Yeah, I think so. So anyway, it's not just the Democrats. It's also the Republicans who are complaining about this guy just up and disappearing. And maybe everything's fine. Maybe he's hiking on the Appalachian Trail naked. Or maybe, but who knows? He says he's going to check into the office tomorrow. I suspect people will be paying attention. All right. Presuming he's all right, that story doesn't actually matter. But it is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because maybe he's hiking naked on the Appalachian Trail, which goes through something like 12 or 14 different states. None of them are South Carolina. And, by the way, the protection of that Appalachian state, paid for by federal money, the Appalachian Trail, paid for by federal money, the same federal money that Sanford didn't want, remember, from the stimulus bill, that he was very upset because they made him take the money.
His own state legislature made him take the money, not the federal government.
That's right. That's right. His own state legislature. And then they went to court. He then went to court. The Supreme Court said, no, you got to take the money, you idiot. All right. We're going to come back with something a bit more serious, but I think you will still enjoy it. We're going to come back with Andy Worthington, historian and journalist, to talk about Gitmo and what the hell is going on down there. Brad Friedman in for Malloy all this week. Oh, we'll take your calls, too. I got to give the number out because it's a different one. 877-520-1150. You can also stop by bradblog.com. We have an open thread at the top of the blog. The lovely Agent 99 will be nice to you. Give us a call. 877-520-1150. Andy Worthington up next. To the Malloy program, Brad Friedman of Brad Blog in for Malloy all week. We're going to move from naked governor to, oh man, naked prisoners at Guantanamo. Sorry. Joining me now and taking your calls at 877-520-1150. If you have any questions about what the hell's going on down at Guantanamo, this is the guy who literally wrote the book on Guantanamo. Andy Worthington joins me. He is the freelance journalist and historian and a regular contributor to the UK's Guardian, the Daily Star Lebanon, the Huffington Post, antiwar.com, Counterpunch, and Alternet. He's also the author of The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 759 detainees in America's illegal prison, and he's staying up very late for us tonight. We're doing a little sleep deprivation on him. How are you, Andy? Welcome to the show.
That's very good, Brad. It is a bit like sleep deprivation. It's very late here, but I'm all right.
And I really appreciate you staying up late for me tonight, because really, you are the guy, you are the source. When I have a question about Guantanamo, when there's a story breaking on Guantanamo, you've got the scoop. You've got the real details. For example, on this Al Libi fellow who was found reportedly committed suicide a few weeks ago. He was the link that the Bush administration offered between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, and that link came under torture. We're going to talk about him in a little bit and about that suicide. But first, the title of your book, Andy, The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 759 detainees in America's illegal prison. Illegal prison? What's so illegal about it?
Well, you know, there's only really two ways that you put somebody in captivity. One is that they're a prisoner of war and they're treated according to the Geneva Conventions. And the other is that you hold them as a criminal suspect and put them forward for a trial. The Bush administration came up with a third way, enemy combatants who could be held without charge or trial if that's what the administration desired. And if they wanted, they could put them forward for special military trials. Special terror courts, the military commissions. You know, and that's the mess that we're all left with. Mess is actually the word that Barack Obama used in a speech a couple of months ago to describe his frustration with what he was dealing with. But that's it, really. I mean, there is no third way in which you deal with prisoners.
And it's not the prison itself, then, is not illegal. It is what is going on and the way they're operating it. Would that be a more accurate way to describe it?
Well, Well, I'm not sure that it's ever been, you know, really cleared up as to you know, why it is where it is and what that means. I mean, it was specifically chosen cynically by the administration because they thought that the U.S. courts wouldn't be able to have any oversight of Guantanamo because technically it belongs to Cuba, even though the U.S. Holds sovereignty over it, or, you know, is in charge of it. And in fact, it, you know, they got away with that for 2.5 years until the Supreme Court said, look, you're holding these guys without any rights whatsoever. You never screened them properly. We actually are going to say to you that that the U.S. law does apply there. And because you have held them without any rights whatsoever, we're going to do something quite unusual for prisoners in wartime. We're going to give them habeas corpus rights, and we you know, want them to come to courts and be able to explain why you're holding them. And of course, that was the summer of 2004. That was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It took another 4 years for the Supreme Court to have to come back and say the same thing again, because in the meantime, politicians were prevailed upon to change the law and to deprive them of these rights.
And there was really no cleanup between the time that Supreme Court decision was made and the time Barack Obama came in. I mean, my understanding is he just walked into the mess you described. It was an absolute mess. Records were missing for these folks. They were all over the place. What records there were. Is that an accurate description of what he found when he took over in January?
I think that is an accurate description, yeah. And I think it's kind of still the problem. And I think that they've, to some extent, have tried to find these kind of elusive extra bits of evidence. You know, they came across the files and they looked at them and went, what is that it? and the truth is that in most cases, that's it.
Hang on. Hold the thought, Andy. I got to get to a break here. We're going to come back with plenty more with Andy Worthington and your calls, 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in from Malloy. Stay with us. Listening to the Malloy program. Malloy's on vacation. I'm not. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com speaking with Andy Worthington, a journalist and historian and the author of The Guantanamo Files, the story of 759 detainees in America's illegal prisons. You can give us a call, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. And there we go. I got it back. Andy, who joins us, by the way, from, are you in London? Am I right?
Hi, I'm in London. Yes.
Actually, in London, in the middle of the night. God bless you, sir. We were talking about Barack Obama and the mess he inherited when he walked in, and I've got some criticism for him, but before I get to that criticism, the files we had, how many hundreds of prisoners were there when he took over, when Obama took over in January?
There were 240-something.
And most of them had already been released. Am I correct? Is the majority of folks who were released, I'm sorry, the majority of folks who were captured turned out to be completely innocent and they were released?
Yeah, they were either completely innocent. I mean, that's the case with hundreds of men, or in the case of hundreds of other men, they had gone to Afghanistan long before the 9/11 attacks to help the Taliban fight their enemies in Afghanistan in an inter-Muslim civil war, the Northern Alliance. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as soon as 9/11 happened and after that, the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan, then they instantly became enemies of the United States. But for the most part, these guys hadn't gone out to fight the United States. They'd gone out to fight Afghans, other Muslims.
And so this whole worst of the worst business, these guys are the worst of the worst. It turns out most of them weren't worst at all. Some of them had nothing to do with terrorism whatsoever. And when Obama came in then, they found that what? The files were all over the place. The information about these guys was it just messy, or did it not exist? Were we holding people that we just had no information on at all?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of information on a lot of the guys, actually, Brad, to be honest. I mean, you know, the majority of the information has come from the interrogations of other prisoners. Well, we know that, you know, if torture wasn't used, then other forms of coercion were used. We know that there are certain prisoners who have been bribed to provide information, you know, better conditions, who've gone for that. People with mental health issues have been coming up with stories against other prisoners. This doesn't really count as evidence. I think a big problem has been that it's been extremely difficult to get information from certain intelligence agencies. But, you know, again, part of this problem is, do they really have anything or not? A terrible mess in a way that he took over, but I think that they've dithered a lot and that they really should have had enough background information to say, well, look, most of these guys don't need to be here. You know, this was a colossal mistake on the part of the previous administration, and I think they haven't made that clear enough.
No, they haven't, and the Democrats have sadly fallen for so much of this, we can't give the money to close down Gitmo because, my God, these terrible, these worst of the worst, they'll come into the United States and somehow they will escape while they're being transported. I mean, we keep already the worst of the worst, the real worst of the worst, in our Supermax prisons. And this notion that we're unable to, keep these guys locked up is laughable, not to mention, hey, some of them are innocent and some of them, sorry, but they may have to be freed even if they do pose a danger. And many of them, am I correct to presume here that many of them may not have posed a danger before, but after being held without charges for 6, 7, 8 years, maybe they're a little ticked off right now at the U.S., and maybe they do pose a danger that we created?
Well, I think that may be the case. There may be some of the people who are held who've been, radicalized by what's happened to them. It's not my experience from looking at the stories of the majority of the people who've been released from Guantanamo. I don't think that it's very easy to kind of create a terrorist out of nowhere, if you like. I think what we really need to get down to is that there's a few dozen, maybe 3 dozen, genuinely dangerous people in Guantanamo, and the rest we should be looking at how to get rid of, how to send them home or find another place for them. Now, the dangerous guys that we're talking about, and I agree with you, what's so scary about a country that has the most efficient maximum security prison set up in the world? Why are these guys somehow exceptional? They're not. They've been held safely for 7 years in Guantanamo. They were transported there without any problem. Take them to the mainland, sort out the trials they're going to have. End of story. Let's get this horrible, long-running saga to an end.
I concur. Let me take a quick call, and then I want to ask you about Al Libby. Tim, calling in from Detroit. Hey, Tim, welcome to the Molloy Show. How are you, sir?
Pretty well. I think Mr. Worthington answered my question, but I'll still ask it. In his research that he's done on the Guantanamo detainees, has he found that probably the ones held now are most of them innocent of any sorts of acts of, as we define it, terrorism?
Well, I don't know what the exact figures are, I would say that there's a few dozen people there that are dangerous enough to be put on trial. We know that they include people who have claimed involvement in the 9/11 attacks and various other terror attacks, and there are some other people. But all the figures that have come out over the years, recently Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff, said that, all the information that he'd been presented with when he was in a position to be hearing about this, were that there were no more than 2 dozen prisoners there who had any serious intelligence value. And over the years, stories that have come out from CIA operatives and from various people inside the administration who've spoken about it have mentioned these same kind of figures, 2 dozen to 3 dozen people who are significant in any way and in any way connected to terrorism.
Does that answer your question, Tim?
Could I have a follow-up question?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, regarding even those who are suspected of any terrorist acts or crimes, due to the torture that they've undoubtedly received, wouldn't any evidence now in any new trials be considered a fruit of the poisonous tree?
Well, yes, in theory, I think that's absolutely right. And I would, I would very, very much hope that in future there won't be cases where somebody's got to be put on trial and these kind of things will arise. But, my way of looking at it is, if there is genuine evidence against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that he was the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, I can't see that there's a jury anywhere in the United States that's actually going to care when it comes down to it in a courtroom what happened to him. they are going to convict him. You know, this is how I think it will work.
Sounds like vigilante justice, actually, but...
Sorry, what's that?
That sounds like vigilante justice, American style.
Well, I don't think so. I think that if genuine evidence can be provided, evidence that wasn't obtained through torture, then, you know, then sadly everybody will reach the conclusion that they're going to overlook the other things that happened to them. I can't see that people will be released because that happened if they genuinely were involved in these terrorist attacks.
But thanks for your call, Tim. On the issue of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, how certain are you that the information we've obtained from him was not under torture is actually accurate? Because I know, you know, a lot of the 9/11 truth folks out there, they don't buy into this KSM thing at all. Where do you fall on this? Do we have good information, or did this all come under torture?
Well, I mean, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin al-Shib bragged about their involvement in the 9/11 attacks to an Al Jazeera reporter before they were captured by U.S. forces. You know, it seems to me that on that basis, really everything that happened afterwards was extremely counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you follow the story of Ramzi Youssef, who's the nephew of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and the whole involvement in the attacks on the Twin Towers in 1993 that Youssef did, the plans to blow up airplanes, the plans to use airplanes as bombs, I think there's a long story of that, and that probably makes sense. I hesitate to prejudge absolutely, because I think even after everything that's happened, this should be sorted out in a courtroom if at all possible. But, you know, I would say that that's the case. It looks that way. But, you know, we're talking about a handful of people. And, you know, out of nearly 800 who were held in Guantanamo and out of the many thousands who've been held elsewhere.
We're speaking with Andy Worthington, author of the Guantanamo Files. I almost called it the Gitmo Files. Close enough. The story of the 759 detainees in America's illegal prison. When it comes to putting these guys on trial, guys like KSM and so forth, which Obama has said, essentially given three options. One, these guys are going to be released because they're innocent, like the Uyghurs we saw recently released. They're going to be put on trial in a courtroom, or they're going to be given, there's four options. They're going to be given a military tribunal, or in some cases, held indefinitely without charges, essentially when the government can't make his case. Is the government here, including Barack Obama, not trying to have it all ways? In other words, if they can't get a conviction, then they're not going to put him on trial of any sort.
Well, they are trying to have it every way possible, it seems, yeah. And, you know, I've got a problem, really, that they've moved a guy who they say was involved in the African embassy bombings in 1998 to New York, where he's facing a trial. Now, they've said that they might not do the same with some of the other guys, maybe the ones involved in 9/11. Now, that's obviously caution on their part, where they think, either because of the torture that took place or because there are some fears that they have about not securing a conviction, then they're not going to go ahead. Well, I don't think that it's really legitimate to have two systems, one which is the established federal court system and the other which is the military commissions, which were revived by Dick Cheney and have had a terrible and inglorious history for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
With only three dubious results, and almost every time that they convened, they were a mockery. But if they were to go ahead, they would undoubtedly be full of holes again, would be caught up in all kinds of problems that haven't yet been foreseen.
Do you have any confidence then in Obama's plan as far as the changes he's making to these military tribunals? Are they going to have any better results, or are we going to be forced once again to just leave these guys to rot for years on end?
Well, I still think they won't be fair. I mean, I just do think that it would make much more sense to just say, look, we're going to get this down to the smallest number of genuinely dangerous people. We're going to go for the court trials. As I say, I mean, I honestly think any genuine evidence is produced, there's no way a U.S. jury is going to let these guys go. The other thing, though, that you mentioned, which is preventive detention, which, as far as I see the way it's been proposed, is that this wouldn't apply to these highest value prisoners. It would apply to people that they suspect of militancy, presumably the kind of militancy that tends to terrorism. So actually, slightly lesser characters in this whole scene. These must be the guys at the fringes of the numbers I've been talking about, maybe the third of the dozen of these prisoners. You know, they obviously think there are more than that because they've been banding around figures of between 50 and 100. Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, if these guys aren't really considered that dangerous, why are we making exceptions for them that say, you know, you're either guilty or you're innocent as a result of a court case? We're inventing a new category of prisoner who we can hold. And, we start with suspected terrorists. Who do we go on to next? You know, we have in your country, you've lived for over 200 years with the laws as they stand, that if you suspect somebody of something, you put them on trial. If the trial fails for whatever reason, well, then that guy goes free. That's how it works.
Yeah.
You know, it honestly terrifies me, the thinking of inventing a new category of holding people and doing it humanely and according to the law and reviewing it. It's like, no, I don't think you've kind of got this, really.
Yeah, and
if you haven't got a case, sorry, you know.
I know, and I'm afraid that that's what they're going to do. That's what Dick Cheney and George Bush did, and it seems to me that Obama is doubling down on that idea that we can do that. We're speaking with Andy Worthington, author of The Guantanamo Files. We're going to take your calls when we come back. 877-520-1150. Don't use Mike Malloy's normal number. He ain't going to get it. 877-520-1150 if you have any questions. And we're going to find out what came of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, if I pronounce that right, right after this. Brad in for Malloy. As for you, Andy, staying up late in the middle of the night for us out there in London, Andy Worthington, journalist, historian, author of The Guantanamo Files. Much appreciated, sir. I want to get, we got a bunch of calls here. So very quickly on this story of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, and am I pronouncing it close to correctly there, by the way?
I think that sounds about right to me, actually.
Thank you. For a Yankee, not bad. So he's one of these guys who, one of these ghost detainees, suddenly he kind of goes missing after 2006, right?
Yeah.
And shows up, he shows up a week before he then turns up dead in a Libyan prison, and a supposed suicide. Now, he was the guy who, under torture, supposedly provided the link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, the link that was completely phony, wasn't made, you know, didn't exist after he'd been, essentially buried alive in a box for 12 hours or something and told them anything they wanted to know. Bush Cheney used that then when they wanted to go to war. Was he the only guy that they had, the only information that they had, phony information as it was, that tied Iraq to Al-Qaeda at the time?
It was the main one. I mean, I heard more recently that they pushed Abu Zubaydah for similar information as well. You know, and on both bases, I think it was kind of rather stupid. I mean, there's a veteran FBI agent who said, you know, well, al-Libi ran an Afghan training camp. Why the hell would he know anything about Iraq? You know, and this is one of the guys who had al-Libi and had started talking to al-Libi and was getting al-Libi to cooperate without torturing him for that short period of time, a couple of weeks, I think, before the CIA put him in the box and sent him to Egypt. You know, these FBI guys, you know, not only were they skilled in interrogation, but I think they knew exactly what they were looking at. And the story was really built up that the training camp that al-Libi and Zubaydah were involved in was connected to Al-Qaeda, whereas in fact it wasn't.
And is there any more information? He was supposedly, it was a suicide. Do we have any information to confirm or deny that? Very quickly, too, because I want to get to calls and we're almost out of time.
Sure. Well, I mean, the Libyan insiders say that, you know, this is a regular occurrence with Gaddafi, that people commit suicide when it's found out, when the bodies are delivered, that, you know, they've miraculously shot themselves in the back of the head. It doesn't seem likely at all. The timing of it is weird. You know, Human Rights Watch researchers had been to the prison just before he died, so maybe the Libyan government thought he was getting a bit too close. But I must admit, I was suspicious because the U.S. flag was raised in the embassy in Tripoli for the first time in over 30 years, just a few days after he died. It all seemed a bit convenient.
For what reason was the U.S. flag raised?
Oh, well, you know, to really solidify the bonds of friendship between both countries, closer than ever.
Just out of the blue, they raised this flag?
Yeah, 3 days after our Libby died.
Wow, that's bizarre. Milton, Florida, Dan, you're on the Mike Malloy Show. Very quickly for Andy Worthington. Oh, Dan in Florida?
Yes, this is Dan. How are you doing tonight?
Good. What's up?
Okay, basically, I just have to disagree with you a little bit on, it's with both Bush and Obama. We're kind of, I think, mixing up concept of operations and implementation here. You know, we're talking, you know, you're on a battlefield and, you know, people are dying left and right, your side and their side. You have people left over, you take them as prisoner. On the battlefield, you know, you have to take people. Where would you suggest that we take them?
Okay, where would you suggest? Thanks for that call, Dan.
I got more.
I know, but we're running out of. Actually, Andy, can you stay over the top of the hour? I know it's a god awful hour out there, but I got some good calls. I'd love you to stick around if you can stick around for 15 more minutes.
No, I can do that. I mean, may I answer this question?
Yeah, please do. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the key element is that, you know, I'm not saying by any means that war isn't a difficult business when it's being fought and that all kinds of problems arise and what do you do with prisoners. The key thing that I think people need to understand that didn't happen, specifically on the instructions of Cheney and others high up in the chain of command, was that every war since Vietnam, the U.S. military had held what are called competent tribunals. They take place very close to the place and time of capture of prisoners.
Andy, I got to take a hard break. Stick around. More Andy Worthington after the top of the hour. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, in for Malloy. Coming up very shortly, Ed Asner is going to be joining us. Ed Asner, you may know him as Lou Grant. He's going to be joining us and taking your calls. He's also the star of the hit new Pixar film, Up, which rocks. Up with which it rocks. I kept Andy Worthington, journalist and historian, author of Guantanamo Files, stories of 759 detainees in America's illegal prison, kept him over a little bit longer because there was some calls. I want to try to clear out the calls here that we have on this issue. And Andy, thanks for staying up until the 3 a.m. or whatever the heck it is out there in London. Our last caller, you wanted to finish your answer to that last caller. I got to put him on, don't I? Here we go. I'm the fill-in host. That sort of thing happens. Sorry about that, Andy. So, yeah, we wanted to finish your response to that last caller about the court system that we've created here.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that in a battlefield situation, what had happened since Vietnam onwards was that competent tribunals, part of the Geneva Conventions, were held, where they would decide whether the people that they captured were actually soldiers or whether it was people who'd been caught up in the kind of fog of war. And the kind of crucial statistic to me was that in the first Gulf War, they held 1,200 of these, and nearly 900 of the men were sent home because they'd got the wrong people. Now, the military was preparing to do this in Afghanistan, and the orders came from on high. There are no battlefield tribunals, no competent tribunals. We're not having them, essentially because Cheney and Addington, who were kind of driving the thing, had decided that everybody that they caught was an enemy combatant, so they didn't need any screening.
Really? So nobody was filtered out?
Remember this. Hey?
And is it nobody was filtered out? Essentially, anybody that they caught, they kept them and they shipped them into prisons?
Yeah, they sent the orders from on high. Every Arab that came into U.S. custody had to go to Guantanamo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, all right. David in Los Altos, California, welcome to the Molloy Program.
Hi, thank you. Andy, I think my question might dovetail with the last one with the answer. I remember there was a lot said when we started putting prisoners in Guantanamo that these were not prisoners of war, they were the enemy combatants. Is it too late to just call them prisoners of war? It seems to me the war is with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. We don't have a ceasefire. We could just continue to hold those prisoners.
Good question, David. So, yeah, have we used enemy combatants before, or did we make that up entirely for this new war?
Yeah, that was made up. I mean, you know, there's an interesting point about prisoners of war, and in theory, maybe it isn't too late, but then we would have to have a different conversation. The specific conflict that these men were captured in was the overthrow of the Taliban. Now, you know, Karzai has been the president of Afghanistan for over 4 years now. When does the war end? This war on terror has been going on longer than the Second World War. Can it really go on forever? I mean, they've said it will last for generations. According to the Geneva Conventions, you can hold people to the end of hostilities. But if they really are prisoners of war, then we're now going to get a load of lawyers saying, and I, understandably, I think, when does this war actually end?
Yeah, and so legally, there are legal reasons that we cannot call them prisoners of war at this time, right?
Well, they didn't start off as prisoners of war. I mean, it's such a mess that in certain ways they're actually being treated partly as prisoners of war. I mean, that's partly because the courts demanded that the Geneva Conventions applied. But in other ways, they're treated as criminal suspects. And in other ways, they're still really this kind of non-person in between all these categories, which is these poor guys who are enemy combatants who can effectively be held forever without charge or trial.
how lovely. Boy, America is great. We can do anything. Armin in Beaver Braden, Florida, real quickly for Andy Worthington.
Andy.
Hello.
I think it's obvious, not only in my opinion, but I think probably if you were even more open than you're being, that how could you not conclude that these prisoners, they're buying time. The United States is buying time, primarily the Bush crime syndicate and Cheney crime syndicate, because the last thing that they want, and I watched this reaction through all the medias when they first announced they were going to bring them, outside of the fact, the fear factor of the people in general, it's been programmed that any of the people over there are out to get us for the last 15 years since Gulf War I. The fact is that they were jumping all around. The military came on, the media, all these different things. It's obvious to me, in my opinion, that these people that are being held down there, they're buying time because the last thing that they want to do, the people, the PNAC crowd, Project for New American Century, is they the last thing that they want, it would finish the knot on incriminating Bush and Cheney in a conspiracy against the United States of America. And what it is,
Armin, we're short on time. Can you phrase that in the form of a question?
Okay.
Thank
you.
Well,
they don't want them in court.
What's that?
They don't want them in court because they'll spill the CIA special ops in the Mideast and how they were infiltrated. I believe they were infiltrated and they were totally trained by the CIA to be terrorists and they were manipulated. And
right.
They don't want the whole story out because then the American people will know what's really going on with these oil company lobbyists like Bush.
All right. Okay. Armin, thanks. I'm sorry. We're short on time. Thanks for that thought. Any response on that, Andy?
Well, you know, I mean, there is a story of how, you know, the training camps that were established in Afghanistan were established during the Soviet occupation when the United States was funding the Mujahideen. So, I mean, there is you know, clearly a line from what went from American funding to people who became the enemy. But, I mean, I think the bigger issue about why Cheney wanted to stay open and why so many politicians wanted to stay open is that they can sustain the illusion of a war on terror so long as they're not really made answerable. I mean, that's particularly why they don't want to dismantle and they don't want cases to go to court, I'm sure.
And is that why Barack Obama doesn't want to dismantle this thing, or is he trying to dismantle it as best as he can?
I think he is trying to dismantle it. I just think that he's not been as thorough as he should, to put it mildly. Okay. He's wavered. He's putting too many options on the table. But I think he means it.
All right. Real quick, last call here for you, Andy. Eric in Huntington Beach. Did I hit the right one? Yeah, Eric, you have a question for Andy Worthington.
Yeah, real quick,
yeah,
Brad and Mr. Worthington, is we have a long and storied history of military tribunals here in the United States that goes back to our Revolutionary War. There's things from the Civil War, like Posse Comitatus, Ex Parte Milligan, which is a Supreme Court case precedence. It was ex parte because Lincoln was dead, I believe. There's also case law, and this goes all the way back from 1957, Reed versus Covert, that the U.S. Supreme Court reheard a case from 1956. It was a woman, service personnel's wife in England, who was prosecuted within the military tribunal. The Supreme Court went all the way back to the Magna Carta. Thank you, England. Thank you, our ancestors there in England and the U.K. And made it very clear that the military, which is the executive branch, Article 2 branch of government, is not supposed to have competing court system with our Article 3 judiciary, period.
Okay, thanks for that, Eric. Thoughts, Andy?
Well, it's very difficult to see what's the clearest route forward. I mean, I know that there is a history of military tribunals. I just, my feeling is that what's happened with these over the last 7 years since they were kind of revived by Cheney is that they're discredited in the eyes of, if not America, then in the eyes of the rest of the world. And I worry that by trying to tinker with them and reintroduce them, it will, whatever their pedigree might be, it's a kind of license for trying to introduce a system that won't have universal approval. And what's really needed after the Bush years is for these things to be dealt with in a way that around the world people are going to regard it as legitimate.
Yeah, we've created a real damn mess here. I think no matter who came in, we've just got a mess on our hands because of these idiots, George Bush and Dick Cheney, just to put it bluntly. Andy Worthington, I really appreciate you staying up way late for us. Please check out Andy's work. You can see his blog over at andyworthington.co.uk. Please consider buying his book. You can do it over there. You can check the link at bradblog.com. And the story that we didn't get to, time to, with many of them, but really a heartbreaking story about this Mohammed El-Gharani, who was Guantanamo's youngest prisoner, captured at 14 years old, held for 7 years, finally released last week. Have we heard, did he arrive safely in Chad, Andy, real quick?
He did. They kept him in custody in Chad for a week, and then I think when his lawyers started making a fuss, they actually finally sent him home to be reunited with his family. Yeah.
About damn time. Thanks for being one of the few people who are willing to pay attention to these stories and to tell these important stories. Andy Worthington, really appreciate it. Thanks for everything. Go to bed, sir.
Thank you very much, Brett.
All right, cheers, my friend. We'll talk soon. Okay, we're coming back with Ed Asner. Yeah, Mr. Grant. We made him stay up late, held him over for 15 minutes. We'll make it up to him. He's a good guy. Coming back with Ed Asner and your calls, 877-520-1150, if you have any questions for Mr. Grant. I'm Brad. Back after this.
Out with mine. Gonna make it.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
right.
Joke is right. That's you, Sam. Stuck in the middle with you, no place I would more rather be. Here on the Mike Malloy Show, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com are going to be joined by Ed Asner shortly. You know, we put him off for 15 minutes for Andy Worthington, and we called him back, and he said, forget about it, I'm on the phone. Call me back at the bottom of the hour. That's what Asner's like. Don't mess with the Asner. So we're going to be joining him in just a second. I want to let you folks know there is an open thread over at bradblog.com. We'd love to see you there. Throw in your 2 cents on anything you like, or you can give us a call at 877-520-1150. There's also an open thread, as is always the case, mandatory gathering of truth seekers over at DU. Yeah, DU, I got my eyes on you, and I expect to see some wisecracks and cheap shots at the guest host. I see plenty of skateboarding kittens, but not enough wisecracks about Brad. So I'm watching you, D-yours. Let's take a quick call while we're waiting for Ed Asner to get off the phone. Grumpy Ed Asner. Hey, Patricia is calling from Sacramento. How are you, Patricia? Welcome to the Malloy Show.
Hi there. I'm doing very good. A big fan of yours, and obviously a very big fan of Mike Malloy.
Thank you.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. My question is, and I don't want to beat around the bush here, trying to make it to the point.
All right.
A while back, if you guys remember, on ABC News, Brian Williams reported that the United States, or our CIA, was paying a terrorist group by the name of Jandula to infiltrate Iran and basically cause a little chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, like, kidnap, the Revolutionary Guard. There was, like, different things happening with this.
Oh, that's right. That was 2007 that they were going to try to undermine the regime.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Now, what I'm wondering is, because I'm seeing reports from Seymour Hersh recently talking about how Dick Cheney still has a hand, even mm-hmm. though he's not up there as president, but he still has a lot of people who report back to him that are still working under the Obama administration. So I'm just curious as what your thoughts are as to if our CIA, or if you believe we have a hand in anything of the chaos that's happening right now in Iran.
Okay, thanks for that call. And I would just be speculating here, but apparently speculation is good enough to get you a primetime show on CNN. So I guess I can give you my speculation. I certainly think that we hyped the pre-election polls. Actually, one poll that was showing Mousavi gathering steam against Ahmadinejad. I think we hyped that. I think we continue to hype it now. That said, no, obviously something went terribly wrong with that election. Now, did we have anything to do with it? Did we do it? Or was there a real concern by the mullahs or by someone to make sure Ahmadinejad stayed in power? Now, I know there are folks out there who think that this entire thing is being manipulated. Agent 99 over at the Brad blog, who's monitoring in the chat room there, she thinks that this is entirely an operation of the CIA to wreak havoc, to cause revolution, and or give us the opportunity that we were looking for, supposedly to go to war with Iran. I'm somewhat dubious of that. It could be, but you know, there's no way of knowing. And it all comes to and at the same time, by the way, guys like Dick Cheney and his buddies, the Wingnuts, they wanted to keep Ahmadinejad in power so they could use him as a stalking horse to say this is why we have to attack Iran. And you know, how the hell we're supposed to attack Iran when we've got two wars already ongoing? I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what they're even thinking. Are you kidding me? Do you think we could go to another war with another country right now? I don't think so. So you know what, there's my speculation. I don't know. At least I'll admit it instead of going on CNN and saying I know the truth when I'm really just making something up. There we go. Hey, Sam, you got 15 seconds. What's up, my friend?
Hey, 15 seconds is not enough, Brad, but I'll try, man. I wish you guys on the left, I'm one of you too, would stop this nonsense that it was either CIA or Mousavi wasn't really that important anymore. Listen, I'm Persian. Ask any Persian. Have enough decency to have a Persian on your show who can attest to this kind of stuff. It's legitimate. No, in the right mind, wanted Ahmadinejad. He brought maybe 11 out of the 40 million votes, okay? The guy destroyed the country. He ruined the economy. Stop nonsense. Please stop this nonsense.
Thanks, brother. I got to get to a break. We just had a Persian on the show. That was Sam, and I'm glad you got your call and your opinion in. I'm happy to hear all sides. Brad Friedman on The Molloy Show, back with Ed Asner, hopefully, right after this.
Here interrupting Brad Friedman's most excellent program. Wait, it's my program, and Brad is filling in. Uh-oh, but he's so good at this. Hey, I'll be back June 29th, and not a moment too soon.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Hope you're having fun wherever you are. That's right, Brad Friedman in for Mike, who's vacationing the week away. But that up and away in my beautiful balloon, that was for... where are we at? There we go. Hey, Ed, there you go. Did you hear that song for you?
That was beautiful.
Thank you for noticing. You know, it could have been worse. I could have played the Mary Tyler Moore theme, and, you know, you'd be
curious. Stop it.
Okay, well, let me give you a proper introduction. Ed Asner, legendary TV icon, Lou Grant from Mary Tyler Moore, and the Lou Grant series, for those of us who are really going back and loved that series, from also the hit Pixar film Up. That's why we played that music. He plays Carl Fredrickson, a beautiful film. He's also the evil voice of the evil Ed Wunsler on The Boondocks, and at one time, the two-term president of the Screen Actors Guild. Hey, welcome to the show, Ed Asner. Great to have you with us.
You are darling to have me.
And I also should suggest, you're my homeboy. We're both Missouri boys, aren't we?
Where are you from?
St. Louis, actually.
I'll be damned. My sister was a buyer at Sticks Bear.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Okay, and you're from Kansas City, right?
Kansas City.
Yeah, our barbecue's better than yours. I'm just saying.
You're dreaming.
I'm just saying. All right. Well, we'll have that out later. By the way, if you have a question or a call or a question, whatever, for Mr. Asner, 877-520-1150. Use that number, not Molloy's regular number, 877-520-1150. All right, Ed, man, I loved the movie Up. It does. You guys certainly don't need me out here saying nice things about it. It was the number one film for a couple of weeks. It's doing beautifully, but I just thought it was a beautiful film, incredibly moving, and surprisingly, you're now a matinee idol too, I guess, at your age. Pretty surprising that the kids are turning out for this film as well. Was that a surprise to you?
Well, I would expect kids to turn out for any animated piece, but what delights me is the effect we have on adults, and that I find inordinately pleasing.
Yeah, because it's actually a rather, what's the word, melancholy, sad. The first 5 minutes, by the way, especially, rather reminded me of a Chaplin film.
Yeah.
Sort of a silent movie.
There you have it.
Yeah.
I think that...
Ed, is that your phone going off?
My phone, all right.
Didn't we talk about that before?
I'm such a busy man.
And you got us on the speakerphone, too, don't you?
I'm coming off of it.
Okay, all right.
We speak.
Well, that's better, Ed.
I have been so involved in all kinds of... It's been a snake pit here up until your call.
I guess it has. How has doing up this film sort of out of nowhere? Has it been a whirlwind of activity? Suddenly dealing with a number one film.
not, you know, I'm sitting here in the house talking to you. Not that kind of activity. It's just my own personal life is in a big spin right now. I'm trying to get out onto a smooth glide course.
I gotcha.
And the film, I just love to sit, go back, and read Variety and see how well it's doing.
and it is doing well. And by the way, we saw it in 3D, and it was really, really cool in 3D. You don't have to see it in 3D. I think it probably works fine either way. But it was really cool.
I saw it I've seen it three times. First two times I saw it without 3D, and I liked it, I think, better.
Yeah. We liked it better not in 3D.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, then give me an excuse to see it again. What did you have, was the voice work on this film, were all of the actors in place? In other words, with the young boy, was he there? Did you guys do the scenes there?
No.
You were all separate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, just working with the either both directors or one director, and who were also the writers, and it was an intensive session. The sound man was there, and writing heard, and the various assistants to the director, but we were just in a small community group of four or five.
I'm really surprised because, you know, the dialogue comes across so well that I would think you would be in there having the conversation with them, but I guess that's not how they do it at Pixar. Listen, I wanted to ask you, Ed, you know, going back to Lou Grant, not even to Mary Tyler Moore, but to Lou Grant, the TV show, the newspaper guys, what do you see when you're seeing this year? I mean, they're calling this year the year the media died. What do you think about the death of newspapers that seems to be upon us?
It's been upon us ever since when we were doing Lou Grant. The death of newspapers was occurring. It's been a long time ongoing process, and it continues to go on, and God knows where it's going to end.
Does it matter?
I said, oh God, yes, it matters.
Yeah.
I think we're all in chaos. We're all fumbling around trying to find our ass with either hand because we don't know. We're in a huge vortex, and we don't know where or how we're coming out of it. I mean, the internet. I mean, the recent SAG negotiations for the Screen Actors Guild. The confusion that reigns supreme with most actors there. The fact that pronouncements were made even before negotiations began. This will be the end of residuals, for instance. We are in a... It's like one of those things they have at kids' parties where you're up in the air, you're anti-gravity. I think we all are lacking gravity in terms of media.
And to what do you blame on the decline of the media? They love to blame the old corporate media, the old newspapers, dead trees as they call them. They blame us. They blame me. They blame the bloggers. They blame the internet. I'm not so sure I agree. I think in many ways they have themselves to blame. Where do you put the blame, Ed?
I put the blame, well, it's so easy to always say corporate greed, let it go at that. I think from the beginning, I used to say that, you know, this newspaper is going out of business, that newspaper is going out of business. It's not that they couldn't have existed and made a profit, but the publisher or the corporate owners felt they could make better money elsewhere, so they left the newspaper. They were no longer dedicated to getting their political, sociological thoughts out to the public. And it was the dollar was the bottom line, and that's what wrapped up newspapers.
Well, and exactly. In the old days, Bill Paley, CBS, the Tiffany Network, they knew they had the best news division going in network news. They knew they were going to lose money. They didn't care because that was the jewel in their crown. And it seems like once we decided that we had to profitize, we had to monetize everything, it seems like it just hastened, the death of these. And, well, I...
Well, CBS CBS is a very good case of it. When we were doing Mary Tyler Moore and Lou Grant, CBS is, you know, the flagship news organization in television that you could find, and radio.
Right.
And then we sat there watching. I believe Tish was the CEO at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was after Paley.
Right.
That began tearing down, concising, and taking this phenomenal Panzer unit of news and constantly shrinking it in terms of personnel and money.
Because it was all about making profit. It was no longer about the news and the prestige that came along with that. Get folks in to watch the news, and hopefully they stick around for primetime.
Right, right.
In 1982, I was actually reading your Wikipedia page, and I wasn't familiar with this. By the way, I was a huge fan of the old Lou Grant show, but I think you had felt at the time that it was canceled. What network was Lou Grant on?
CBS.
CBS. Was it politics that killed the Lou Grant show?
Oh, I think so, sure. We were kept alive the first 5 years because we were award winners all over the place. I became outspoken in that last year, and Mr. Paley didn't like it. And Lou Grant definitely was the show because of its prestige and what it had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been, you know, if anything, a lost leader. Just for the prestige,
right.
But because they couldn't visualize sufficient money being made out of it, they canned it.
And politically, they had a reason because you were never shy about your political views, and so they used that. You feel
right.
You want to take some calls, Ed?
Yeah, I would. I would also like, and you know, it seems a strange segue, but it's like Detroit. Detroit, all those years. With John Dingell leading the parade in the House of Representatives with his enormous power, continuing to turn out those gas grinders, is flying in the face of ecology, flying in the face of foreign competition, and then now all of a sudden we find, my God, look, the gas grinders. We can't sell them.
Yeah, who knew?
My God, what happened?
Who knew?
What have they done to us? Where's the rest of me?
And we saw the same thing happen, by the way, in the 80s. Remember when we got our asses kicked and everybody was wondering, well, gosh, Japan is making these cars that everybody wants because they're fuel efficient, and we didn't learn the lesson, did we?
No. We seem to have a Prussian approach to whatever we do, either in corporatism or in the Prussian approach certainly applies to pharmaceuticals, doesn't it, in this country? That we gonna get this much and we're gonna push this, no matter what the cost to health or to the ecology, and you're gonna like it.
Yeah, and now I think the chickens are coming home to roost. Let me grab a call here because we got the board filling up. Folks want to talk to you. Scott in Los Angeles, welcome to the show. Question for Ed Asner.
Mr. Asner, I have really nothing substantial to ask you, but I admire all you and everything you stood up for. But I want to tell you, I did, I remember you from Rich Man, Poor Man. Every time I think of you. And you did a great job on there. And anyway.
And Roots, thanks for the call, Scott.
Great.
And Roots, I actually forgot about Rich Man, Poor Man.
Oh.
I was too young. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
All right, let me get, where are we here? John in Minneapolis. Thought for Ed Asner.
Mr. Asner, hi.
Hi.
Listen, I don't want to turn into one of those weird guys that goes on and on, but let me just say, 30 years ago, I walked into a record store in Kansas City, and I thought, geez, that guy looks just like Ed Asner.
Oh, good.
Found out that was your brother.
It was.
Anyway, I don't know if you remember, but 25 years ago, I was part of a big strike. I now teach school, but a big strike in Austin, Minnesota against the Hormel Company.
All right.
And it was I was so thankful for, and this was the same time I think that you were taking a lot of heat from CBS, and you were willing to stand up and talk about the workers.
Real quickly, John, I got to get to a break.
Really appreciate
that. I supported you then, and I still support you.
Just a quick question. What do you think of the criticism Obama is taking right now about not being far enough to the left, especially with the majority that he has in the Senate and in Congress, and when it comes to health care, about pushing that through?
Good question, John.
What do you think about that?
Good question. Ed, don't answer it yet. Thanks for that call, John. We're going to come back and get Ed Asner's answer to that question. Has Obama gone too far to the right? Hang in there, Ed. We got to take a quick break.
All right.
Brad Friedman in for Malloy, back with Ed Asner and many calls as we can fit in right after this. Singing some song. Back with Ed Asner. Yeah, sorry, Ed. Do I have him on? Yeah, there we go. Sorry about that, Ed. Ed Asner, of course, Lou Grant, and star of the hit Pixar film Up in theaters now. Make sure you see it. Ed Asner, the question before we went to the break, has Obama moved too far to the right, as you see it?
Oh, I certainly don't. I certainly don't think Gideon. He's moved too far to the right. It's hard to tell where he is, but he's Gandhi dancing like he has been ever since he came in. I mean, he surprises us with a sweeping approach on one hand, and then does an amazing sideways shift to the other. He fascinates me. He fascinates me because of his promise of progressiveness, and then it comes out of the blue with a step to the right. Mm-hmm. So I understand his problem with the Congress, with the Senate we have, because an article in today's Times talking about the centrist Democrats who, like Ben Nelson, Max Baucus, who is no great progressive light, and they're all swung him down because they want to be sure and entice Republicans, so he doesn't have a guaranteed 60 vote majority in the Senate, and so he's got to be careful with him. But
he does have political capital to spend that he doesn't seem to be spending.
That's true. That's true. He could make great pronouncing proclamations. Mm-hmm. And the what was the cartoon I saw? Was it also in the New York Times where it showed his ratings far exceeding his positions that lead to those ratings.
Mm-hmm. And although they're dropping, and I think it's because he's not being progressive enough. I got to get to the top of the hour, so let me try to get in a real quick two more calls if I can. Kathy from Gold Beach, Oregon, welcome to the show. A very quick question for Ed Asner.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank him for the many years of excitement and joy and humor that he's given myself and my family. I really, really appreciate you, Ed, and I appreciate what side of the political fence you're on as well. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the wonderful, wonderful enjoyment you've given to myself and my family over the years.
Thanks.
I really do appreciate that.
Thanks for that call, Kathy.
Listen, I just read something in Science Times today. I love organs, my second home in a way. I just read that there are 1,000 ready to tumble schools from the next earthquake that Oregon is primed. So get those people there busy on earthquaking those schools.
Oui. Thanks for that tip. The rest of the call has got a bunch of callers running out of time, though, Ed. Ed Asner, thanks for joining. By the way, I read your Wikipedia page. You were raised as an Orthodox Jew, so I'm wondering, what the hell is an Orthodox Jew playing Santa Claus in the movie Elf?
I'm trying to win converts.
Smartly done, sir. Always good to talk to you, my friend. Ed Asner, thanks for everything.
Why do you ask me if I'm an Orthodox Jew now?
Why do I? Are you?
Why don't you?
Are you?
Oh, of course not.
I didn't think so.
No.
All right. You're going straight to hell, Ed Asner.
I know it.
I know,
but look at the company I got.
I'll see you there. Ed Asner, thanks for everything. Up is in movie theaters now. Please go see it. And, Ed, keep up the good work, my friend.
Thank you, Brad. I enjoy it. And let's keep Obama forging ahead.
We got to push him. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. Ed Asner, the legend, the TV icon. Gotta love that man. All right, back with much more Malloy Show and Desi Doyen in the Green News straight ahead.
Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Well, not here. Brad is here, filling in for me and doing a damn good job. Yes, I'll be back June 29th. Play nice while I'm gone. Keep it lit.
Keeping it lit for you, Mike. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in all week for Mr. Malloy, who's down in Florida somewhere, having a much-deserved, well-deserved vacation. We will be taking your calls this hour on just about any damn thing you want to talk about. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Although for the first part of the hour, we'd love to try to get some green-ish questions in here for myself and my co-host on the Green News Report, Desi Doyen, who's in here with... Take that out of your mouth, would you... You're on the air now. You can't. All right. We do the Green News Report. If your radio station doesn't carry it, call and complain because it's a 6-minute report. We do it a couple times a week. We run it, of course, at BradBlog.com and on radio stations around the country. And if you haven't heard it, as I say, I was going to say you have only yourself to blame, but really you have your radio station to blame because they can pick it up for free. Right?
Yes, they can. And they can also listen to it at greennews.bradblog.com.
That's true.
All of our reports
are
ready to go.
Or they can listen to it right now as we kick back for 6 minutes and play today's episode of the Green News. Then we're going to come back, take some calls. You're going to give us some Green News extra and whatever the hell anybody wants to talk about. You ready to roll, Tony? Roll it, baby.
It's Tuesday, June 23, 2009.
Save the planet for less than 50 cents a day.
What a bark.
Energy company sued for conspiracy.
Good.
Plus, River of Fire.
River of Fire.
River of Fire.
Cool. I'm Brad Friedman.
I'm Desi Doyen.
Yeah, you are. And this is your Green News Report. Wake up. Are you there?
I'm here.
All right. What do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, the Congressional Budget Office has released new numbers that should help move the Waxman-Markey Climate and Energy Bill currently under contentious negotiations in Congress. The CBO calculated the projected economic impact of cap-and-trade legislation on American families and says that the net cost of reducing the nation's emissions would cost American households an average of $175 per year, which actually amounts to less than 50 cents a day.
Now, the Republicans have been telling us it's going to be $1,600 a month or something.
Right.
Crazy
Republicans
like
continue to purposely misrepresent the economic cost.
You mean they're just making it up?
They're making it up based on false interpretations of bogus studies and in some cases of correct studies that they actually purposely misrepresent.
Yeah, and it's been shown that they were false, but they keep doing it anyway.
Continue to do it anyway. Okay. Even in the face of these new CBO numbers, which again, it averages to less than 50 cents a day, and that's an average across all households. Now, when you break it down, poor households actually would see a net gain due to rebates and subsidies in the bill, and for the wealthiest households, those making more than $100,000 a year, the estimated cost would still amount to about 70 cents a day. Of course, that's in stark contrast to the expected cost of energy, water, and food if we do nothing, as predicted in last week's report from NOAA on the impact of global warming in specific regions. And the CBO also says this estimate does not include any calculations on the economic benefits we can expect, like savings from energy efficiency and other changes.
So they're talking about just the raw costs.
Just the raw costs without including any benefits whatsoever.
Okay.
Mega oil giant ExxonMobil has been ordered to pay interest on damages from the massive Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska 20 years ago. In 1989, the oil tanker Exxon Valdez ran aground in Alaska's pristine Prince William Sound, spilling millions of gallons of crude oil, destroying what had been one of the world's most abundant fisheries. So for the last 20 years, Exxon has fought those damages in court. And last July, the Supreme Court, in a split decision, granted ExxonMobil's appeal and reduced the punitive damages from $5 billion down to just $500 million. Exxon argued then that the interest on the unpaid damages should be calculated from the date of last year's decision. But no, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals doesn't agree and has ordered ExxonMobil to pay what amounts to about $500 million in interest.
So we're talking about, $1 billion total is what they had to pay for that?
Yeah, that only amounts to an average payout of $15,000 to the 33,000 people whose livelihoods were destroyed by the worst oil spill in the nation's history.
And I'm guessing it paid off for them. They went ahead and spilled all over Prince William Sound, but in the end, it was worth it, wasn't it?
It actually cost them less, yes. Also in Alaska, the residents of a tiny village are suing energy companies because they will soon be among the first of the world's climate refugees due to rising sea levels destroying their homes. The Army Corps of Engineers even declared the situation in the tiny village of Kivalina to be, quote, dire. The Kivalina villagers are seeking damages of $400 million, the estimated cost of relocation by the federal government. Their suit charges energy companies ExxonMobil, BP, Chevron, and others with criminal conspiracy for funding research that denies global warming exists and also for being a public nuisance.
Cool. And this their community is actually dealing with the rising waters already.
As we speak
the
right
now. The ones that have been predicted, the ones that the energy companies, the Republicans have said, it's a bunch of nonsense. This water is encroaching on these people.
Yes, the loss of sea ice alone, for example, has caused the ocean waves to actually lap at the buildings of their community already.
Sue the bastards.
Exxon calls the conspiracy charge a conspiracy theory, except, of course, that we do know, when we have the facts to prove it, that they did actually fund global warming denier front groups.
Oh, man.
Nestle has announced a recall of their entire line of raw cookie dough products due to possible E. coli contamination. The Centers for Disease Control say the source of the E. coli that has sickened 70 people across 30 states has not yet been determined, but they all were connected by having eaten raw Toll House cookie dough. No one has died, but Nestle is recalling all their raw cookie dough as a precaution. That's over 86 million cookies worth, except for their cookie dough ice cream, which, surprisingly, the cookie dough in the cookie dough ice cream is actually cooked.
Really?
Yes.
They cook the cookie dough?
They cook the cookie dough that goes in the ice cream.
Okay. So it's just cookie ice cream, really?
No, cookie ice cream is safe. It's raw cookie dough products. Like if you buy their pre-made...
I understand, but if it's cookie dough ice cream, but it's cooked dough, then it's actually just cookies in the ice cream, not cookie dough.
Okay, yeah, you could say that.
I just did.
Finally, it was 40 years ago yesterday that the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire and burned after being used for decades as an open sewer for the dumping of raw industrial waste. The sight of a river on fire was actually not uncommon at the time, but this river fire in 1969 sparked a shift in American attitudes towards protection of our natural resources and led to the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency and passage of the Clean Water Act. After years of extensive and expensive rehabilitation, the birds and the fish have come back to the Cuyahoga River, and it is now actually a national recreation area and a nice city front park.
Great story. Way to go, Cuyahoga. I know the people had a fight for that out there. The government did not want to do anything. Cuyahoga fought real hard, and it's good to see a happy story coming out of Cuyahoga, Cleveland. All right, read about that and so much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And that's the way the cookie dough crumbles. This has been your Green News Report. There you go. There's some applause for you, Desi. There is your Green News Report. Good job. If you don't pick up the Green News Report, you can get it at greennews.bradblog.com. If you'd like your station to carry it, tell them about it, and they can drop us a line, greennews@bradblog.com. And we're going to take your calls. Desi's going to stick around with us here. The comely Desi at 877- Don't roll your eyes at me. 877-520-1150. She's going to stick with us. We're going to talk about a few more of these environmental issues, some stuff we could not get to in today's Green News Report. Well, we're going to get to it now and to your calls, and maybe we'll clarify that cookie. Yeah, any more on that cookie dough story that you want to clarify, the cookie dough ice cream, the confusion that you seem to have?
No, I think I understand now what you were asking.
You see, because if you cook the cookie dough, it's...
Before you put it in, then yes, it is cooked.
It's cookies.
Well, they don't actually put on the label raw cookie dough ice cream, so I suppose that wouldn't be as appetizing.
Well, what would it be if it's not... If it's cooked, cookie dough is cookie dough. There's no two ways about this.
I guess you should talk to them about truth and advertising.
Am I going to have to get Ben and Jerry on the show to discuss this, to clarify this? One of the stories that we brought up there, Desi, this $5 billion penalty for Exxon that was knocked down by the Supreme. Actually, it was originally $5 billion before the Supreme Court knocked it down?
It was originally the punitive damages were passed in 1994 with the lawsuit, and the jury awarded the $5 billion, and that was what they had been litigating over all these years, saying we want to have that appeal reduced because they had already spent $3.5 billion on cleanup, they say. They say the region has been rehabilitated, which people who live there say it hasn't. So they were saying, well, you know, we've already spent so much, it should be reduced. Now, these are just punitive. They're not cleanup.
We've already spent so much, it should be reduced. They spent so much cleaning up the oil that they spilled, all the crap they put all over Prince William Sound,
that they felt that they didn't deserve the punitive damages of that high.
And they waited until they had a Supreme Court that they could get to agree with them,
essentially.
Well, it
took them 20 years, but they did get there, yes.
And so it was knocked down to $500 million. Now, Ninth Circuit says they can charge $500 million for interest over 20 years.
Right. Exxon had tried to argue with the Supreme Court last year,
right,
that the interest should be charged only starting from the day of the Supreme Court decision rather than back in 1994.
From the Supreme Court decision
a year ago.
So what are the chances? Here's my question, and we'll take a break, come back and take yours if you want to give us a call. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. My question, this decision by the Ninth Circuit says they have to pay $500 million. Do you know, is Exxon going back to the Supreme Court? Can they go back to the Supreme Court?
Yes, they can.
And yes, they are?
We don't know yet. They have, they've said so far that they are simply studying the decision, and they will then decide what they're going to do. But yes, they can. They can still do that. Now, previously, argued it before, Supreme Court declined at the time to look at their interest request of saying, you know, we want to lower the interest rate and the amount of time that the interest has accrued.
Oh, really?
That was in the 2008 July decision that the Supreme Court said, no, we're going to toss that back to the lower court. So now that that has been done and has been decided by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they can take it to the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to keep our eye on that because I Got Money says they're going back to the Supreme Court. But we'll see. I hope I'm wrong. All right. When we come back, your calls. Want to talk about legislation?
Waxman-Markey.
Thank you. Waxman-Markey and the one in the Senate. Climate legislation in which the Democrats are collapsing, I think, on themselves before the Republicans have even gotten their greedy little hands on it. Desi Doyen, my co-host of the Green News Report, joins me, Brad Friedman, for much more right after this. Give us a shout, 877-520-1150. Right now, hot, rainy. Talked to my parents in Missouri. They said it's absolutely miserable. They said, don't bother coming home to visit. You'll hate it.
Because of the weather?
I don't know. I kind of thought that they just wanted me to stay away. I'm suspicious of the whole thing. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Desi Doyen, co-host of the Green News Report, producer of the Brad Show when we are broadcasting in place of Mike Malloy and anyone else who will have us, broadcasting live from Los Angeles and taking your calls and questions on green news issues. And we'll move into any other damn thing you want. Open lines. Bring it on. And the number is 877. That's right. Don't call Mike Malloy, though. You'll wake him. Call instead 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. You're going to need it all week because we want to hear from you. All right. So we were talking about this legislation in the Senate and in the House and the fact that Democrats seem to be rolling over on themselves, seem to be compromising with themselves before they even get to the Republicans. Now, just to be clear, we're talking about climate control energy legislation.
Yes, the Waxman-Markey American Climate and Energy Security Bill.
In the House. And the reason I say we need to be clear is because they seem to be doing the same thing on health care, frankly. It's Democrats
negotiating with themselves.
Yes. Yeah. And so in the House, we saw these Democrats, and I guess we're seeing this in the Senate as well, Desi, Democrats from the coal states, from the farm states.
They have created their own climate legislation. And, of course, this will all have to come together and be negotiated for a final bill for the president to sign. But the Senate bill is really not very much better than one would have expected. It's not at all what
worse?
The president
is
asked
it worse
for.
Than
yeah.
The House?
It is kind
is that
of
the word
worse than the House. It actually reopens offshore drilling, for example. And one of the issues that came up with that was that Florida senators had actually negotiated, I think it was in 2006, they had said, we don't want to have offshore drilling.
Right.
So what we'll do is we'll do a compromise where you can do offshore drilling 50 miles or more off, or 60 miles or more offshore.
Right.
And since then, with this new version that they have negotiated in the Senate to go along with this climate and energy legislation in the House, that they have changed that against the wishes of the Florida senators to actually bring in offshore drilling in some places as close as 10 miles offshore.
And this is the legislature down in Florida is very Republican. So
yes, it is. And they were in favor of it. Jeb Bush, as governor at the time, was against it.
Yeah.
Well, because they, you know, one of the issues with that is in case of an oil spill, then tourism is Florida's number one economic activity, and any kind of oil spill will damage their beaches, and the beaches are what people come to Florida for. So.
And so was it Democrats then who opened the door to these things like offshore drilling, or was this a compromise with Republicans?
I think it was more of a compromise with Republicans, the Blue Dog Democrats, who all happen to be, as we said, from not just from coal states, but from fossil fuel states, like Senator Mary Landrieu from Louisiana. Louisiana handles a majority of the United States refinery capacity. So when, for instance, when Katrina happened, you know, we mm-hmm. had a severe hit to all of our refineries down in Louisiana, and that is one of the things that she wanted to actually put in more provisions in the Senate bill to create higher royalty sharing for the states that get royalties from offshore gas leasing and from the fossil fuel industries. Now, one of the issues that they did bring up, one of the good things in the Senate bill, and there is a good thing, is that they want to renegotiate what the royalties are for the leases and offshore gas and oil drilling.
So the companies can get more. And states can get more, and the oil companies can't just sit on these things for years on end. We've got some news coming out of West Virginia, protest of mountaintop removal mining. 30 people were arrested, including Dr. James Hansen, Daryl Hannah, mm-hmm. a former congressman, Ken Heckler, and others were arrested for civil disobedience. One of the coal thugs from Massey Coal was arrested for battery. This comes from our friend Bob Kincaid at Head On Radio. And for those folks who are listening on the MikeMalloy.com stream, Bob will be following us. I believe it's a rerun. Not a rerun, but a replay of today's program follows us tonight. We're going to talk about that much more. Take your calls, everybody. Oh, got a lot of callers coming in. We're going to get to those in a second. Brad Friedman with Desi Doyen sitting in for Mike Malloy. We'll be back.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself.
Mike Malloy here, interrupting Brad Friedman's most excellent program. Wait, it's my program, and Brad is filling in. Uh-oh, but he's so good at this. Hey, I'll be back June 29th, and not a moment too soon.
What does he mean by that, not a moment too soon? What's he getting at? Yeah, Brad Friedman here. Excuse me. Bringing it in 34 minutes after the hour. Bringing it in for a landing. although we're keeping it lit. Desi Doyen joins me. My lovely, comely co-host. I just like the word. Comely co-host Desi Doyen from the Green News Report. You can get more information on what she does there. She's also the managing editor, I should add. And what I do, basically we describe it to folks, Des, you read the Green News and I heckle you.
That's how you describe it. The way that I describe it is we try to bring you all of the climate, energy, environmental news that you don't get to hear on the mainstream media because they just have too much. They don't have enough time to cover this kind of thing. They're too busy talking about John and Kate. And about David Letterman and Sarah Palin, all the really important things.
That's the grown-up way to describe it. And you reading the news, I heckle you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. You want to take a quick call?
Sure.
Or two, or three. You can give us a call, 877-520-1150. All right, let's go to Steve. Steven in Burbank. Oh, Steven in Burbank. Hey, Steven.
How you, Brad?
I'm good. Hey, wave. I can see you out the window here in Burbank.
Yeah, I could throw a rock twice and hit it.
Okay.
It's their cattle complex.
That's it. Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
What's up, Steve?
Well, I called in about health care, but it's really not too difficult to connect the dots between the health care and the environment and employment and things like that there. I mean, what's happening is the right wing is keep yammering at us, oh, you don't want a government bureaucrat standing between you and your health care.
Right.
But what I see...
You want a health insurance bureaucrat standing
Yeah. But what I see is not only them, but also Republicans, you know, what I call Dino Democrats, and corporate-owned Congress,
yeah.
You know, standing between us and our health care.
Yeah.
And it all ties in with, as we know, money. And money is nothing more than their tool, their tactic to control the population so they can determine who gets what. Here the right wing is all yammering about, oh, we got to do something about Iran, yak and yak. What money? What money are you talking about? We need health care. And then they're saying, what money? What money are you talking about?
It's all about the money, Steve, and you're right. I mean, that's the problem here. And Desi, well, I'm sure you concur. You've been looking and seeing how much these oil companies are spending on lobbyists now because they know they're up against it and they're going to be finally regulated.
Yeah, the most recent article that I saw about that was that they had actually something like $80 million has been spent since January alone in trying to lobby Congress on the Waxman-Markey bill, and that the climate lobbyists now outnumber congressmen by 4-1, I think, and that's just since January as well.
Yeah, and so it's the same story. Frankly, I see the same story going on in the healthcare debate and in the environment debate. And unfortunately, we can't blame the Republicans. And frankly, we should be able to blame them for everything because they're nuts, they're crazy, they're bought and sold. We don't need them. We do need them. We need a legitimate right wing, but we don't have it. So we have these crazy, wacko Republicans. But we can't even blame them. It's the Democrats who are getting in the way of so much of this stuff. That's your thinking too, Stephen, eh?
You sound like I sound, verbatim.
All right, you get to host tomorrow. Thanks for the call, Stephen. No, yeah, you're in.
I'm not my day job. I am more effective in my day job.
That's okay. We're on at night. I got to go. I got to get another caller. We'll see you here tomorrow night at 6. All right. Let's go to David. Veronica in Dallas. David, you hang on. Going to go to Veronica in Dallas, Desi's hometown. Hey, Veronica, welcome to the Molloy Show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Let me first apologize. I've got a real bad cold right now. I don't sound too good, so if you don't wait, let me know. I'll try to speak up.
All right, well, speak up and speak quickly.
This whole crime with the XL values, I was there when it happened. It was 89, I remember it. The man was drunk. Is he still driving boats? I bet you that he is.
Is the captain of the Valdez, forget what his name was.
I don't remember his name either, but...
They proved he was drunk at the wheel.
He was actually acquitted.
Was he? Well, he was acquitted?
He was acquitted when it went to trial.
It's a crime. This is a massive crime. I mean, this is akin to dropping a small nuke. This is not right. They need to pay. And Americans need to be jumping up and down. That and about many other issues.
Yeah.
But there is no clean coal. I don't care what anyone says. You want to talk about coal? Get involved with the Rockefellers. Go up to West Virginia. Eyeball. You'll see there is no clean coal. All these beautiful clean coal people are also not there. All these energy people are bought and paid for. They have Congress bought and paid for. They can do what they want. You know, and it's a shame, but we need to be jumping up and down. We need to be yelling and screaming, you know, about that, about the crimes, the Bush crime family did. We as Americans really need to come together about these issues, and I'm actually doing that. You'll be seeing on YouTube, I won't advertise for my show, but I will be doing a show. It's going to be an animated cartoon talk show.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have celebrities such as Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have Bill O'Reilly.
O'Reilly. But you just advertised for it, Veronica.
Oh, sorry. It's not going to be a show.
That's okay.
Okay, I'm not advertising the name of my show. I'm just telling you it's going to be on Infonet.
Okay.
And it's going to be rather on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be on there, and
uh-huh.
I'm going to be out there slugging out with the rest of you guys.
All right. Well,
I want to let you know this.
Well, keep making noise, and don't tell us the name of the show. But what's the name of the show?
You told me not to tell you the name of the show?
Yeah, but go ahead. What's the name of the show?
It's Infonet. It'll be Infonet.
Infonet. Oh, you already told us that. You did advertise your show.
I'm so sorry.
No worries. It's no problem at all. I'm glad you're out there making noise. Thanks for the call. Actually, I really appreciate it. And frankly, you got to make noise. Calling the Molloy Show is a great idea. Calling the Rush Limbaugh Show is a better idea. Call the Hannity Show is a better idea. Take it to these guys. You know, I go on a lot of these right-wing stations. I've been on Fox News. A lot of people said I've debated Ann Coulter, ran her off the air. A lot of people say, why are you going? Why are you even talking to these people? You got to talk to these people. Doesn't mean you have to agree with these people, but showing up and shaming them, that works.
Also, it helps if you call your representatives. I know it seems very silly and basic, but they need to hear from you because they're hearing from all the people with lots of money. So if you call your representatives and you tell them what you want them to do, then you can't say that they can't say that they didn't know.
Okay, then call Hannity. You can get the number, by the way, for your representatives if you go to bradblog.com. All the way on the bottom right, we've got you put in your zip code, and boom, gives you your senator, your governor, your house reps, everything else. Let's go to Dave in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Sure, what's up?
I'm one of the 43 people who was arrested in civil disobedience at the Cliffside action in Charlotte on April 20. And I have a question, and that is, what's the percentage of climate scientists who say that global warming is a problem of human creation, and what percentage say it's a natural cycle?
Yes. I don't think I have the percentages worked out, but I think that there is one list of climate scientists that are deniers that's been turned out to, that has been discovered to be bogus because they went and called some of the people. It was a list of 3,000 or so.
Because a lot of them aren't scientists, and some of them are scientists, but they
did not agree to have their names put on
this list. And their names were misused, and they disagreed.
So it's really hard to find specific numbers on how many deniers that are actual scientists who actually disagree with this, but in the side that supports that it's human caused, that's thousands and thousands and thousands. That's another one that's hard to get to the specific numbers, but you could say that the percentage is probably something along the lines of minuscule.
That answer your question, David?
Yes, thank you so much.
All right. Well, and what was the action? The Cliffside action? Do you know which one that was?
I'll let him talk.
April 20.
What did you do?
In Charlotte, 43 of us were arrested against the coal plant being built at Cliffside in North Carolina.
Well, bless.
I'll be going to court on the 15th of July.
All right. Well, bless you for doing that and for showing up and for making noise. And I'm sorry for the garbage that folks like you have to go through and have to deal with the courts because you're standing up and making noise and doing the right thing. That frankly, the Democrats in Congress should be doing. They should be progressives in Congress. They ain't. And so really appreciate you, at least going out there and doing that. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Let's get to and we will take your calls, 877. We'll try to get as many of them as we can in here. You want to hang? This is going to hang until the top of the hour. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Let's get to, where are we here? Rose. There we go. Rose down in Pompano Beach, Florida. How are you, Rose?
Well, I'm listening to you, and I don't know your name. I apologize for that.
It's Brad.
Hi, Brad. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you, Rose?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
Awesome.
And I'm listening to you, and you're okay.
But, okay. You're okay, too. You're okay.
I'm listening to a lot of stuff, and I'm full of, a lot of knowledge and a lot of things. But I did call today because my daughter just come back with a negative on her breast cancer.
That's good.
And yes. But if she had it, she would have had to pay $50,000.
Yeah, you know, and there was...
pre-existing condition, and she pays like almost $900 a month.
And $900 a month?
Every year.
Wow.
I mean, every month for like years.
Yeah, you know, I had a story that I wanted to get to, and I don't think we're going to have time, but the hearings, maybe I'll get to it later this week. They held hearings in Congress about this, and the media didn't pick it up. Story after story of folks
Democrats are wimps.
Yeah, well,
okay,
they are.
They have no backbones. They have nothing. And
yeah,
the Republicans, they're all backed by the corporations, and so they come on and say what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I know what's going on. Okay?
You do. Thanks, Rose.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for making noise out there. Yeah, they had these hearings in Congress, these heartbreaking stories, these people who had gotten cancer and everything else, and they were dropped because the health insurance industry went back and essentially invented what they believed to be pre-existing condition. Oh, the doctor put a note here, or he put a check mark by. That must mean they had a pre-existing condition. We're going to drop them. And it's heartbreaking stories. And actually, the report that I had here was from Time magazine. I won't have time to get to it, but I want to give Karen Tumulty credit for at least covering this, because Time covered it. But as let's see here, the Media Matters found out, they searched the Nexus database for ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS. They also searched the New York Times and Washington Post, and they couldn't find any reportage on this hearing. In this case, they said the Congress was doing their job. The Democrats were doing their job. They were holding hearings on this.
And they were talking about the process. But, it's called specifically rescission, and it means that after these people who have already paid into the insurance company have paid all of their premiums on time, once they make an expensive claim, then the insurance company drops them.
Yep. And
and when they were in that hearing on this process of rescission, one of the congressmen, even a Republican congressman, asked them if they would commit to stopping the process of rescission, stop the process of dropping people after they make a claim,
mm-hmm.
and every single CEO of every single insurance company said no.
And yet, we don't want a government bureaucrat between us
and
our doctors. Give me a break. All right, we're going to take some more of your calls when we come back to wrap up the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike all week long. Desi's going to hang with me to the top of the hour, and we're going to go get something to eat. All right, give us a call if you like. We'll see if we can pitch in. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. More after this.
Use that rabbit I can't see. Keep it, I take a ring from me.
Brad in for Malloy. One more segment. We'll be here all week. And Desi Doyen is sitting in with me here. We're going to try to, I'm going to try to bust through all these phone lines. All right, here's the deal. You get 15 to 20 seconds, and then I'll answer really quick, and we'll get through them all, and we'll clear out the lines. So nobody goes home unhappy. All right, let's see. Steve in Burbank, also our homie. Hey, Steve, what's up?
I got two real quick things for
two?
You.
Two? Pick your best one, Steve.
Okay, Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
She proved that with the whole David Letterman slap. They had all kinds of jokes about people being, you know, incest with their daughter and whatever else.
Yeah.
Bring a Rodriguez into the situation when previously it was all just white guys. You bring a Rodriguez in and suddenly, ooh, it's a big issue with her.
You think it was racism?
Yeah.
Okay.
What else would it be?
Stupidity.
Well, there's that, too, and,
yeah,
you know, she's got nothing else going for her. She wants to get in front of the cameras again.
Yep. Thanks, Steve. All right, we're going to get to Dave in... There we go, Dave in Bakersfield. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, hey, are you still doing election reform?
Yes, I am.
Great. Hey, hats off to you.
That's it?
That's it.
That was easy. Yeah, go to bradblog.com, my friend. I'm reporting on it every day. As a matter of fact, I was beating the hell out of the New York Times because they don't get it. Their editorial they did in support of Rush Holt's election reform bill is unbelievable. Did they read the thing? Do they get it? Do they understand this? They were doing this, we got to end paperless electronic voting. No, we got to end electronic voting. What? Paper trail makes no difference. Well, you know, it makes no difference if there's a paper trail on a touchscreen voting machine. It's equally as unverifiable. Just get rid of it. And the fact that the New York Times is doing this and they're endorsing Holt's bill, which is a hell of a lot better than it was 2 years ago, but it still ain't there because you know what kind of systems it will allow forever? The kind of system that I voted on last June here in California when the stupid machine misprinted 4 out of 12 of my own votes. All right? These machines will be allowed. If it prints out your ballot and it's counted by another, that'll be allowed. Well, guess what? 4 out of 12 of my votes were misprinted. Thankfully, I noticed, but the system I was using was made for blind people. How would they have noticed? New York Times, read the bill, pay attention. Let's see. We're going to Bill in Boston, Massachusetts. What's up, Bill?
Good evening. I'd like to know what's wrong with the Democratic Party leadership that they have this guy, this killer, Bachman, who has decided that single-payer insurance is off the table. I wonder how many people have died because of that, if I may, son of a... Never mind.
All right.
I wonder how many have died because of him.
All right. Thanks for that thought. Yeah, you mean Baucus, Max Baucus, not to be confused with Michelle Bachmann, the crazy Republican housewoman from the House. All right. Desi, yeah, what do you think? Max Baucus, is he screwing this thing up or what?
Yes, I believe he is, just in my opinion. That I think that Baucus was the one that actually said, I believe it was him or Kent Conrad now, I can't remember, who actually said that they want to make sure that the private insurance companies are taken care of.
Yeah.
Quote.
Well, we'd hate to put them out of business. They've been so good to us. Charles in L.A., you got 10 seconds. What's up, my friend?
Yeah. Everybody should call Max Baucus and the rest of them, ask them to support H.R. 676, the United States National Health Insurance Act.
Yeah. H.R. 676.
Medicare for all.
John Conyers' bill, 83, I think it's 83 co-sponsors of that bill, and it's not seeing the light of day. H.R. 676. Thanks, Charles. Good point. Call them. Ask them to put it on there. That will give you single payer, which is what we really need in this world. All right, last call. Dave Ear in Hollywood, sir. You got 10 seconds. Hit it, brother.
Hey, Brad, it's absurd to discuss global warming without mentioning chemtrails. If they don't spray the clouds, we all die. We all cook. Chemtrails. All the clouds are artificial. We're taking care of it. Don't talk about global warming without mentioning chemtrails.
We didn't. You just mentioned it. Nicely done, Dave. All right, I want to thank all of my guests who came in. Well, on the phone, Andy Worthington, who stayed up till all hours of the night out there in London, Ed Asner, the irascible Ed Asner, the lovely Desi Doyen here in studio, thank you very much, my producer and co-host on the Green News Report, also engineer Tony Sorrentino, sorry brother, call screener Miranda Moreno, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, Agent 99 at BradBlog.com, KTLK AM 1150 for having us in, did I say Agent 99? Yeah, I did. Mike and Kathy Malloy, thanks guys, hope you're not listening and having a good time instead. For those listening via MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned for our friend Bob Kincaid on Head On Radio. We'll be back with you tomorrow night with Sybil Edmonds. Holy cow. Brad, out. Keep it lit.